Retirement Conversation is a series of episodes on the changing nature of retirement today. These conversations are focused on the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition, including career, work, purpose, wellness, social relationships, and leisure pursuits. You'll hear from leading experts in the field. You'll hear the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll find out about practical ideas and tips to create your own. Retirement Wisdom was co-founded by Joe Casey and Dennis Wussman, two former business executives turned professional coaches. At Retirement Wisdom, our mission is to save people from a boring retirement. We hope you enjoy the series and conversations.
Welcome to this episode of the Retirement Conversation. Today's guest is Fritz Gilbert. Fritz is a corporate commodity trader, aspiring philosopher, and lifelong financial hobbyist who is on the cusp of early retirement at 55. Fritz and his wife recently sold their primary home and moved into a cabin in the North Georgia mountains as part of their downsizing strategy for retirement. Fritz created his blog, The Retirement Manifesto, a canvas for helping people achieve a great retirement to share their lessons learned during their journey. The Retirement Manifesto focuses on practical financial independence and retirement planning issues for folks within 10 years of retirement. Fritz, thanks very much for joining us today. And what else should people know about you that's not in this introduction?
Well, thank you, Joe and Dennis. I appreciate being on your show. I guess it's a great introduction, by the way. I think the main takeaway is I'm in this with a lot of other people in our generation. And I guess what's different about me is I've just decided to write about it as I've gone through the journey. And I've been writing for about 3 years now. And it's just fascinating to see how many readers have come back, that we're walking this journey together. And I guess that's what makes me different is that I'm taking the time to kind of document the journey and talk about the decisions that we're making as we face retirement, the softer sides as well as the financial sides. And I'm just being transparent on our journey for the benefit of everybody. So that's probably what makes me unique.
And speaking of that journey, Fritz, we've read that you're actually in the final countdown. You're retiring in early June. Congratulations. And what will life be like for you starting in June going forward? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, Joe, that's a good question. I've been working for 33 years, and you can think about retirement all that you want. And I do think about it. My wife and I think about it a lot. But, really, it's kind of a who knows. We've never been there. And it's not until you cross that threshold and actually experience, that freedom that we haven't had since we were basically in school, right? We've always had people telling us what we need to do. We've always been chasing the almighty dollar. And to me, what excites me the most is for the first time since I was probably 4 years old, having the freedom to do what my wife and I decide that we want to do and not have the pursuit of money being the primary factor in that decision. And, what a great privilege to be in a situation where we're going to get out at age 55 and we can just choose to do what we want to do. I mean, how much more exciting can life be than that? So that's probably the biggest thing we're excited about.
That's great. As you mentioned, you started your blog about 3 years ago, and I noticed that in the beginning, it seemed to be focused on the hard side of retirement, the financial side. But as time's gone on, you've written many excellent pieces that I've retweeted that are really on the soft side of retirement, the flip side. I won't call it the dark side, because that's the side of the street we cover as well. But what do people need to know about the non-financial side of retirement, that soft side, that maybe they aren't focused enough on today?
Yeah, that's an interesting transition that I've gone through. When I started the blog, I really thought it would be all about the financials. How do you determine when you're able to retire? The 4% safe withdrawal rate or 3.5, whatever number you use. And I wrote for probably the first 6 to 12 months, probably 80% of my articles were around that side of it. But as I started reading more and thinking more and discovering more, What I really discovered was that it's the non-financial side that really dictates for most people how successful their transition into retirement is going to be. And if you read the studies and the surveys about people that struggle on that transition into retirement, it's really normally not the financial side. It's the fact that they haven't given enough consideration and really deep, serious thought about what they want their purpose to be, what, you know, what's going to fill their day, what's going to get them up in the morning, use whatever phrase you want to use. But you know, for the first time in your life, you're responsible for filling your day with something that brings meaning and purpose. And if you don't think about it before you get there, you know, it can be a real shock. So as I've discovered that, because of that realization, I've spent more and more time thinking about that side of retirement, and my writing has reflected that. And I think it is important. You know, if people haven't realized the importance of the non-financial side, you know, do some research, spend some time, really think about what you want your life to be after retirement, beyond the financial side, because ultimately that's what's going to dictate how great your retirement really is.
Yeah, I read somewhere that people spend more time planning the vacation than they do what their retirement life is going to be like. So
And
retirement, you can have a period of time that feels like a vacation, but then reality sets in. It's different.
Yeah. And I appreciate you guys because you've been there, right? I've not been there yet. So one of the things I'm doing is I'm talking to a lot of my friends who have retired over the last 5 years. I'm asking for their advice. You know, I'm reading articles from other people that have retired. And that's a very consistent message, Dennis, that, you know, it's really different. And there's kind of phases in retirement. You kind of have the honeymoon period when you're on, you know, vacation. But that only lasts a period of time. And then kind of the reality sets in that, you know, this is your life and what are you going to do with it? So, yeah, it's important stuff.
And you mentioned before that there's a retirement shock in the early days. And I've seen you've written about retirement fails, as you call them. And what are some of the common mistakes that people should look to avoid those retirement fails?
Yeah, I think... You know, what I've found, and again, I've not been there, so I'm relying on words and research of others, but I think probably the most common thing that I've seen is when you've got these really strong type A workaholic, you know, driven personalities, which a lot of us are, present company included, and we've been successful in our careers, you know, we're always on call, we're always on demand, we've got the big meeting, we've got the conference calls, we've got the presentation to do. If you don't manage it and you let that, let's call it a frenetic work lifestyle, run right up until your retirement date and then you leave, I think that's probably the biggest fail that I've seen is people who just haven't stepped back and kind of been more intentional on trying to kind of ramp down their work life and ramp up their, let's call it, external life, you know, their life outside of work during this transition period, let's say a year, 18 months before retirement. If you don't start intentionally ramping that down and ramping up the other, I think based on, you know, what I've read, that's typically what gets people in trouble. And, you know, so many people, you know, they hit the shock, they leave, they, you know, don't have a purpose. They don't know what's going on. And to me, the ultimate retirement fail is if after say 12 months of retirement, you decide, you know, I need to go back to work. And, you know, to me, and I'm not being judgmental because I know different people have different reasons, but if I reach a point where I have to go back to work because I can't find a better way to fill my time, that to me is kind of the ultimate retirement fail. You know, I've worked all this time to have this freedom. You finally get the freedom and you just sacrifice it because you're unable to fill that time with meaningful work and effort that brings value to you outside of the monetary side of life. That's kind of what I define as a retirement fail.
And people, you mentioned, you know, we're ahead of you on this a little bit, but it's a journey. It's a journey of experiencing things and change. And the people that you've talked to and some of the mentors you might have had or role models you've had that have gone before you, what have you learned from them on how they got themselves better adjusted for this or ready for this? Well, what are some of the best practices, if you can, that may have come from some of the conversations you had with them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, it's been interesting, right? I've been in corporate America for 33 years, so I've seen a lot of people go through this, and because I have a bit of a passion for this topic, you know, I've probably pursued them and kept in touch with them more than most. So, I don't know, pick 20 or 30 people probably that I've seen go through this transition, and you see a really wide spectrum, right? You see people who go through it absolutely smoothly. I think of my boss, you know, I had a boss back in the 80s, really great guy. And his life, as he was working, he had the really good work-life balance. He had a really strong work, really strong life outside of work. He had a ton of hobbies. And his transition was very, very smooth. I've had other people who, as I mentioned, were kind of the type A, driven right till the end. And, you know, those people, I think the approaches that they take to get through it, it varies based on kind of their personality and what works for them. As I mentioned, some may go back to work, which is unfortunate. Some, you know, depression, unfortunately, the reality of it is, like, alcoholism and depression, you know, it's a real issue with a significant percentage of the retirement population. You know, the chances of getting into severe depression in retirement are something like 40% greater than during your working year. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Some people don't get through it very well, and they suffer the remainder of their retirement years, you know, in a bit of a funk. So I think between those two extremes, you've got different personalities that take different approaches. But the general theme that I've seen of people that have been successful have been people that have put the same amount of energy that they put into their work into something outside of work that gave them a greater sense of satisfaction, right? You're no longer doing it for money. You're doing it because it gives you a sense of, you know, you're doing something good for the community, for, you know, the people that you're interacting with, for the charity that you're working for the church that you're dedicating your time to. Pick your cause. But I think the people that have found a cause like that, that they can inject their energy into, are typically the people that have been most successful coming through the transition.
So one thing I noticed in your blogs is the importance of attitude and mindset. And I really loved your post recently on adopting a perennial mindset, partially because they keep threatening spring will come here in the Northeast one day.
It's not going to happen. I don't know.
So anything that has the name perennial in it got my attention. But could you tell us a little bit more about what that's about, the perennial mindset?
Yeah, sure. You know, I came across the concept of the perennial in an article. I read probably 10 times what I write. You know, I'm a voracious reader, a lifelong learner. And I came across an article a while back about this perennial definition. And I guess at its core, if you think about like a baby boomer, right? We all know baby boomers, millennials, Gen Xers, you know, pick your demographic. The thing that all of those definitions have in common is the year in which you were born, right? So if you're, I don't know, 64 to, you know, whatever, 46, you're a baby boomer, right? To me, a much better definition of me, at least, and many others, is instead of the year that you were born, let's try to come up with adjectives that describe kind of the way that we approach life and the attitude and the mindset that we take towards it. And that's what this article was about with perennial. So to me, the perennial definition is kind of a person that has the mindset of just like a perennial flower, right? You always bloom year after year. And from a individual perspective, I think what that means to me is, you know, you're somebody that's always challenging yourself. You're always curious. You're always growing. You're always trying new things. You know, you're pushing up new flowers every year. And to me, that's such a better definition than baby boomer. I mean, who cares the year we're born, right? And the interesting thing about being a perennial is you can be a perennial regardless of the year that you were born, right? I don't care if you're 80, 60, 40, or 20, you can be a perennial, right? And to me, having that curious mind and that, I guess, intentional living in the pursuit of interesting things is a much more, you know, desirable adjective for the way that, you know, I want to be than simply defining it by the year I was born.
Wow, well said. That I think it really captures a whole different way of looking at it. And there's so much written about the baby boomers, millennials, that gives a much more well-rounded view of things. Now, one thing I've learned is that there's more than one flower in the garden. So for many of us, retiring is not a solo endeavor. And in addition to the three of us all being baby boomers and probably all three of us being type A's, we've, I believe, all been married for 30 years or more. So we know it's important to be in sync with your spouse and partner on retirement. But we've noticed that sometimes it's one of those topics that's not really always talked about enough among couples. Would you be willing to share how you and your wife approach getting in sync and what you've learned so far?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're spot on. You know, I think one of the bigger adjustments in retirement is the reality that, you know, in our case, my wife's been a stay-at-home mom since our daughter was born. We've been married 30 years, by the way, so I'm in the three-decade club. And, you know, I think we have to respect as kind of the working man in the household, and I realize there's a lot of working women, and that adds its own complexity, you know, when both sides are coming home for the first time. But the reality in our situation is my wife's been home for a while. She's got her routine, right? She does whatever she does in the morning, and she does whatever she does on Tuesdays. And when I'm suddenly home full time, it's as big of an adjustment for her as it is for me. And a lot of what you see about the difficult adjustment to retirement, a lot of times it's a relationship adjustment, and the recognition that both partners are going through the retirement, even if one has kind of been, you know, from a working perspective, working outside the home perspective, retired for a while, it's still as big a change for them as it is for the one that's leaving the workplace. So I think number one, you asked about how my wife and I are taking it. You know, number one is recognizing that reality and having empathy for each other's situations. And in my wife and I's case, you know, we've talked about this a lot. Obviously, I write my blog, you know, we talk about my blog, what I'm writing about. Well, beyond kind of my blog stuff, you know, we talk about a lot, you know, what do we want our lifestyle to be in retirement and how are we going to manage the different things we're doing? And, you know, I've proactively, you know, talked with her about, hey, I recognize this is going to be a big change in your lifestyle. And I'll tell you something that she did, which I think is fantastic. She came up with this idea where, you know what, we don't really know what retirement's going to be, and we don't want it to be that structured, but why don't we kind of lay out a framework for kind of the typical week? And let's just kind of think about how do we carve out time where we do stuff together, but we also can kind of have time to pursue our own passions, right? So one of the things that we did in conjunction with this is we came up with a retirement activity jar, and we've been doing this for about a year. So roughly once a week, each one of us will put an idea in the jar, and I don't know what ideas she's putting in. She doesn't know what ideas I'm putting in. But I can put in an activity. Let's say we're going to go kayaking. You know, we'll go kayaking on the river, and she may put in, you know, we'll go for a hike, whatever. So each of us are filling this jar with these activities, and the beautiful thing is, half of the ideas in that jar are hers, half of the ideas are mine. But that jar will comprise a weekly activity that we'll do together, right? So one day of the week, we've kind of said, okay, that'll be our weekly activity jar, and then another day of the week, we'll kind of say, okay, she loves pottery. My wife is just, she's fallen in love with pottery. She's actually a very talented potter. I mean, the stuff she's creating now is phenomenal. And she knows that I have a similar passion for my blog. So we said, okay, one day she'll spend at the pottery studio and I'll spend writing my blog, right? So we've kind of been intentional on trying to think about how do we structure our time where we have a combination of together time and alone time. And, you know, we know we don't have it right, right? We're just trying to set up a framework that we can start with. And then I think the most critical thing is as you go through that transition, you communicate with each other, you let each other know what's working and what's not, and you're flexible to change. And we'll see how it goes, but that's kind of the approach we've taken thus far.
What a great idea, both the framework and the activity jar. Those are
Yeah, I also like the point you made about flexibility. And, you know, what we see is how important flexibility is in any kind of relationship, whether it's the with your spouse or whether it's with your friends and your family. Being flexible is critical because things are going to be different. You know, things are going to change and you're learning along the way. So I love the activity jar. I love the – I can picture what would go in Joe's activity jar, though. And I'm not sure his wife would play, but there you go.
There'd be lots of things
in there. That's part of the deal, right? Each of us have an equal say. Well, and she may have some real pickles in there, right? Yeah. Fine, I'll do it. So, you know, I have no idea what she's put in there. And I'm really excited to see the first year of our retirement as we start pulling these things out because we could be setting each other up here. I have no idea. So it'll be fun.
You're gonna have fun. That's good. It's good. Yeah.
But it adds that degree of spontaneity. But as you mentioned too, you have those respectful zones of time for each other to do your own thing. And I think that's so important because you see sometimes couples who try to do everything together. And that for some people it works and for others it may create some issues. But that sounds like a lot of fun. And speaking of fun, Dennis often talks about the importance of having fun in retirement. Matter of fact, we call him Mr. Fun around retirement wisdom. And in addition to the activity jar, I'm just curious, what other things do you plan on doing to keep the right level of fun in your retirement?
It's hard to say at this point because, you know, I know what I want to do and we kind of have a sense of some of the things that we want to do and, you know, she knows what she wants to do. I think the more important thing is it kind of goes back to this perennial mindset. You know, it's that willingness to just pursue different things and specifically in regards to having fun. I guess the thing I would point at is, you know, try new things, right? I mean, we're already, because we're in this transition zone, right? I'm only 66 days away from retirement, if I were counting. So we're already pretty well advanced in this transition thing. And as we go through that, we're already starting to try new things, right? She went to a yoga class this morning. She said it was a disaster, right? The instructor was horrible. She's like, that was a total bomb. And I was like, hey, that's okay. You tried it, right? And she won't go back. Okay, fine. So, you know, I think that at the core is what having fun is all about is, hey, let's just, if you have any inkling of an interest in something, you know, try it out, right? Maybe it'll be fun, right? And maybe it'll bomb. I mean, inevitably, some will fail, right? I got a friend of mine who right now is up in, I won't say where because you never know, but he's always wanted to be like a horse wrangler and work at one of these Western dude ranches, right? So, in order to be able to do that, he's going through like this work camping thing, but to go there, he's got to have some experience doing horses. So he signed up for like a 6-week thing, you know, managing these horses. Well, he gets up there and the lady that runs this place is like a witch, right? He's having a miserable time. Well, you know, so what? He tried it. It was a bomb. You know, some of these things aren't going to work out, but some of them are going to be an absolute blast, right? So to me, it's really just a repetitive exercise of pushing the envelope, getting yourself out of your comfort zone, trying things you haven't tried before. And you know, I'll tell you in a year from now, you know, what I think is fun. But until you've actually experienced them and tried some things and kind of built your portfolio, you know, I think it's really that mindset of experimentation to kind of see what you enjoy doing. That's the way we're going about it.
I think that's great. I'm actually going to call my jar the fun jar now versus the activity jar. I like that. I like that idea. The whole concept of, we talked about type A's before, but I hear even with type A personalities, having a mindset of experimentation, of letting things go, is a challenge for them because they are, most of them have been, a lot of us, myself included, have been structured kind of tight when it comes to certain things. And I guess the word is overly structured. Whereas in retirement, what I'm hearing is that experimenting, trying new things, trying and failing, learning is part of the whole journey and part of the whole experience of fun. And I think it's, totally hear what you're saying with what you and your wife do and make just a lot of sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, let's not kid ourselves, right? I mean, we don't have it figured out yet. I think it's easy to say, it's harder to do, right? People are somewhat, you know, change is hard. And when you've been in a structured work environment for 3+ decades and suddenly you're adrift without the job, you know, I'm not naive enough to think that that's not going to come with some unexpected surprises. But I think the important thing is to recognize that as you approach retirement and be okay with it and say, look, I know that things are going to be different and that's okay, right? And accept it and kind of be flexible and learn to roll with it and learn to experiment. And you know, you only get a chance to do this once, right? I mean, what a great opportunity. Let's make it the best we can make it. And kind of from where I sit, that's the approach I'm taking because I can't think of a better way to take it. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have some bumps in the road, right? But I'm just trying to do as much as I can on this side of the retirement starting line, as I call it. It's not a finishing line, it's a starting line. On this side of the starting line, I'm just trying to prepare myself mentally to recognize how it'll be different and start preparing myself to be flexible to adjust to that.
And it's important to be flexible, but it's also important to have some rules of the road. And I highly recommend to many people your post on the 10 commandments of retirement. And now that you're in the home stretch with 66 days to go, who's counting? What one or two of those 10 commandments are top of mind for you now?
Yeah, but thanks for pointing out that article. I had fun writing that. And that really was kind of my self-directed rules or commandments for retirement, right? So I came out with 10, actually 11 kind of guidelines. And my thought is I'll look back at this, you know, a year from now and I'll say, hey, remember this. I've actually cut it out. I printed it out and I have it sitting in my home office, like right where I can see it. So these are pretty important to me. And since I published those, I guess if you're talking about kind of the one or two commandments that are top of mind, I think the two that have probably penetrated my mind the most since I wrote that post, probably one is, you know, the first commandment, which was have an attitude of gratitude. You know, I think so much of our experience in life is dictated by the attitude with which we perceive it. And we can, to a large extent, choose that attitude, right? So I'm being very intentional in being thankful and recognizing how, you know, what a great privilege it is to be able to retire at age 55. And don't get negative, right? Be thankful. Be gracious. Have gratitude about the fact that you're entering retirement. You know, it's a real gift. So that's probably number one. And probably number two is I would say, I think it's commandment number four, and it's my self-imposed mandate to not make any obligations for 12 months. And what triggered this? We talked earlier about some of my friends that have retired before me, and almost 100% of them have said, you know, the day you retire, you will be blown away by how often your phone rings. But it's kind of the nature of my job and the industry I'm in and whatnot. I won't get into it, but you know, I'm known by a lot of people throughout the world in a relatively specialized field. And they said, your phone will ring off the hook and people will want you to come consult for them. They'll throw some big dollars at you. You know, they'll stroke your ego. Don't, and a lot of them have fallen for that and they've gone back to work, right? Well, my whole purpose is to not have to go back to work. Money is no longer the primary decision in the things that I choose to do. So I'm kind of self-imposing a 12-month moratorium. And if somebody calls me, I'll point them to this blog post. And I'll say, hey, read commandment number four, right? And I'm saying, I am not going to make any obligations for my time, you know, for the first 12 months. I'm really going to take time to be intentional about shifting and pivoting to this new lifestyle. And, you know, after I'm in it for a while, okay, then I'll think about it and I'll figure out if I want to do something different. But make sure you've gone through that transition before you take on obligations. So those are probably the top two that have come to my mind, you know, most often since I've written it.
Next year, I'll be a father of the bride for the first time. And I realized...
Ah, congratulations.
Thank you. But I've realized with three daughters, I think I need to do more homework. And it's definitely one of those financial and non-financial ventures that's best prepared for. And I noticed that last July you had that experience, and curious what lessons learned and advice you might pass along to this rookie and any other parents who are listening who'll be experiencing this for the first time.
Yeah, boy. Well, first of all, congratulations to your daughter's wedding. You know, I think, you know, you think through kind of those milestones in life, right? The birth of your first child, or, you know, whatever, the when you first got your first job, when you got married, right? There are some real milestones. And I'll tell you what, walking your daughter down the aisle, that is something you will never forget for the rest of your life. It's a real game changer. And I would almost view it in a way, and the advice I would give you is almost like what we've been talking about retirement, right? You've got to think about it beforehand. And in the case of our children, and I give my dad credit for this. I remember when I was, you know, 18, 19 years old, you know, just still a kid basically starting out. And he always kind of had this lesson that's always kind of stuck with me. And that is that, you know, a parent's job is to raise up their children to become independent adults. And every day that you've got that child with you in your house is one day closer to when they will ultimately, you know, leave the nest. And as a parent, our responsibility, you know, has to be preparing those kids as they mature and as they get older to get closer and closer and closer to that level of independence. So, you know, maybe when they're 14, they can't go on dates. You know, maybe when they're 16, they can, but they got to be back by midnight. Maybe by the time they go to college, you know, there's no curfew. They're doing what they're doing, right? It's a gradual increase in autonomy. And to me, when you're walking your daughter down that aisle, that's kind of the epitome of where your role as a nurturing father, it never ends, right? But at that point, your daughter is now part of a couple, and she and her husband are now adults, independent. And, you know, the best way to handle that is to kind of view it as a culmination of this process where you've kind of taught them to fly, and she's flying, you know. And I just picture a big eagle with a 6-foot wingspan, you know, over the Southeast Alaska wilderness. And to me, yeah, it's sad, but it's also at the same time, it's kind of a period of celebration and joy because, hey, they've kind of made it, you know. And I think you've got to be prepared beforehand because it is emotional. And, you know, one of the best pictures one of the pictures I treasure the most through my whole life is a picture that the photographer took because I was walking my daughter down the aisle. I think I was up near the front, you know, I'm getting ready to hand her over to the groom, and we're looking at each other. I'm looking at her. I think she's looking straight ahead. And you can probably, because I was there and I know what was going through my head, but I can see in my eyes in that photograph, the emotion that was going through my head. And I mean, it's a really big moment in life, but ultimately it's a celebration because you've done your job and you've done it well. So I don't know what else to say. You know, be prepared. It's a big one. And congratulations again.
Oh, thank you. Well said. Very much appreciated, Fritz. I appreciate it. And Dennis has been through that, so I've already taken
yeah,
his advice.
Yeah, I concur. I mean, what an experience. Yeah. Yeah, we're all we'll hitting the stride right there at that time. That's great. Well, Fritz, thanks. There's a lot of tremendous insights you had here. Specifically around the unexpected surprises that could happen for people, and the ability for people's minds, the function of the mindset and attitude is so important. But as someone who's getting ready for this or starting to think about it, even like before they actually pull the trigger, so to speak, or take the plunge into the next phase of their journey in life, are there two or three things that you'd say, hey, here's things you really should probably focus on and spend some time doing before you actually take that plunge?
Yeah, that's a good way to wrap it up. I guess, you know, the thing that I think about as we went through this process, and you know, we've been pretty diligent about it for maybe 3 to 4 years, and I've been writing about it for 3 years. And as I think through that time frame, probably the most productive thing that we did was maybe about a year out from retirement. We intentionally took like a 10-day vacation, and going into that vacation, we agreed that that would be a 10-day stretch where we would kind of pretend we were retired, right? It's a mini retirement, if you will. And through those 10 days, we really tried to think about, okay, if we were retired right now, what would life be like to know I don't have to go back to work next Monday? This is forever. And what does life look like? And I think the value in that exercise is that anything you can do to force yourself to think about what life is like after retirement, before you get there, from everything I've read, the number one criteria for improving your odds of a good or great retirement is taking the time beforehand to think about what your life's going to be like. So I think intentionally carving out a week and thinking through some of the stuff we've talked about today, you know, being a perennial, you know, develop new hobbies, find, you know, new relationships, figure out how you're going to build those relationships, figure out how you're going to explore and try new things, you know, think about your retirement jar, all those types of things that we talked about. You can kind of compress all that into a week of really intensive introspection, I guess, with your spouse. And of anything that we've done, I think that period of focused introspection is probably the most valuable. And the wonderful thing is, who can't do that, right? We can all take a week vacation. Take a week's vacation and just instead of going off to, you know, wherever you go, just make it a week to stay at home, live in the place where you're going to live in retirement, and just think about what life's going to be like and really start putting your mind into that mode and preparing yourself, because having that mental mindset of flexibility and, you know, recognizing that everything isn't going to be what you want it to be, but I don't care. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to have an attitude of gratitude, you know, whatever. Having all those things predetermined, I suspect, I'll tell you in a year, you know, 67 days, right? But I'll tell you when I get there, if it's worked for us. But as a pre-retiree thinking about this stuff, I can't think of anything better to do. And it's a practical thing that all of us can do. So that would probably be my biggest takeaway of how you tie it all together.
Practice it.
Yeah.
So I think of a new thing for you. You have 10 commandments and a 10-day retirement practice vacation. Oh, that number 10. I think your retirement's going to be a 10 out of 10, Fritz.
I sure hope so. That's what I'm aiming for. I've been working at it for a while, so let's hope so.
The only thing you got to do is switch your date of retirement to the 10th of the month, and you know you're in, man. That's it. You know, that's good.
Well, Fritz, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time. And we'll be following your journey into retirement. And if people want to follow it as well, how can they find you on the web if they'd like to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest place, Joe and Dennis, both, thanks again for having me on the show. It's, you know, it's the Retirement Manifesto, just like the Communist Manifesto, but the Retirement Manifesto. And, you know, that's the best place to find me. And I post an article about once a week, and there's a button there where you can click to subscribe. And, you know, as a kind of a free gift, you get a net worth template. So if you're not tracking your net worth, you can get a nice template to start tracking your net worth and you know, come along and join the journey. And hopefully I can help others to achieve a great retirement.
Well, thank you. Wonderful. And we recommend that. That's wonderful. Thanks again, Fritz.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. That was a great conversation with Fritz Gilbert. Dennis, what jumped out at you? What are your takeaways?
Type A personalities, people who were starting to think about this and how to get ready for it. I enjoyed having looked at them before, and I highly recommend people look at his 10 commandments. And he touched on a bunch of them through when he spoke. Gratitude was very important to him, understated from the standpoint of really showing real gratitude is really important, and no obligations for the first year. And people who retire the way at a younger age can possibly be attracted to different things very quickly. So I recommend. I think the key takeaway for me was I recommend, and I think you can do it for myself. I think anybody can do it. What are your personal 10 commandments for retirement? What things are you going to hold as principles of your retirement life that you're going to stay focused on for a period of time? And I really think if you ground yourself, that'll really help you a lot. So Joe, those are mine. What jumped out at you?
First of all, it was great to talk with him after following his blog for so long. It's great to hear a little bit more of what's behind it. The first thing is preparation and planning. He's been really thoughtful in how he's getting ready, and you can see that's going to pay off for him. Second thing is he's clearly, as he mentioned, a lifelong learner. And I think that helps. Really finding things you're curious about and engaging that side as you think about retirement. And then finally, the activity jar. What a great idea. Yeah. That's something certainly I will adopt and start using, because it brings that spontaneity. And I like how he talked about how he and his wife are approaching things. I appreciate him taking time to share that with us in terms of being able to do things together, but also have time and space to do things that they enjoy, because I find that very important as well. But great conversation, and highly recommend his blog. It's very well done, well written, and very thoughtful. Welcome to our noteworthy segment, where we discuss an article that caught our attention recently and our thoughts on it. Today we're talking about an article in the Harvard Business Review, Design a Retirement That Excites You. It's written by an executive coach. I'll probably butcher his name, but I'll try. Jeff Giessa. And it's not a new one, been around a few years, but came across it again recently and thought it was worth discussing. Dennis, what did you find interesting in this one?
Yeah, so this one talked a lot about the fact that it's not just people move away from their career profession. Their concerns are less financial. They're then more identity-related and change-related. And he asks a question: how can I successfully reinvent myself as I leave behind my career? And what does the next phase look like for me? So what I thought is this concept of designing your next phase. And the whole word of designing is very empowering because you're in control. So what really struck me is to think back to when I created, or you can ask yourself this question: when was the last time you created something, built something on your own or with others? How excited did you feel? How empowered did you feel? How passionate did you feel about that? And that's what he's really trying to get across by the fact that you can design a retirement life that excites you. So I like the whole way he put this together. The other thing, too, is he came across with some tips. And a couple of the tips that he gave, and as you look at the article, one of them was give yourself time to shed old skin. You need to really take a break. And realize that this is a journey, and it's you're not any pressure on you, so to speak, from that side. So taking some time to reinvent yourself, rejuvenate yourself, is very, very powerful. It was a really good article. Joe, what about yourself?
Two things that he highlighted that are part of design thinking got my attention. One, really creating a compelling vision. So what is your idea of retirement? A lot of people are kind of burned out and sometimes skip that step. They just kind of mosey on into retirement and figure it out on the fly. But he really encourages people to take a step back and think about what's that vision that really is going to get you excited about this next phase of your life. And then secondly, really build a prototype. He talks about doing experiments. You don't have to get it right first take. You'll have different shots at it. You'll have time to course correct, but start down the path. So it reminded me a lot of the concepts that Fritz Gilbert talked about in our interview. You'll find a link to this article in our show notes, as well as links to the two blog posts by Fritz Gilbert that he mentioned in the podcast, Be a Perennial and the 10 Commandments of Retirement.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of The Retirement Conversation. You can get further episodes by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, or you can go to our website at retirementwisdom.com. Thanks for listening, and once again, till next time.